Prabhupada's desire was that we honor, especially Jayananda Prabhu's disappearance. There was a letter written to Jayananda Prabhu when he left this world. The letter was dated May 5th, and Srila Prabhupada writes, "My dear Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I am feeling very intensely your separation. In 1967, you joined me in San Francisco. You were driving my car and chanting Hare Krishna. You were the first man to give me some contribution, $5,000, for printing my Bhagavad Gita. After that, you have rendered very favorable service to Krishna in different ways. So I hope that at the time of your death, you were remembering Krishna, and as such, you have been promoted to the eternal association of Krishna. If not, if you had any tinge of material desire, you have gone to the celestial kingdom to live with the demigods for many thousands of years and enjoy the most opulent life of material existence. From there, you can promote yourself to the spiritual world. But even if one fails to promote himself to the spiritual world, at that time he comes down again on the surface of this globe and takes birth as a big family, in a big family like a yogis or brahmanas, or an aristocratic family, where there is again a chance of reviving Krishna consciousness. But as you were hearing Krishna Katha, I am sure that you were directly promoted to Krishna Loka. Janma karma chamaya divyam evyam yogati tatvataha tyaktva deham punar janma naiti mamiti sarjuna. Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Krishna has done a great favor to you not to continue your diseased body and has given you a suitable place for your service. Thank you very much. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami." Then Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to Harikar Swami and told him that we should honor Jayananda's disappearance like we normally do with all other previous acharyas. So generally on this day, at midday we have Pushpanjali. After the class we will then have Pushpanjali and Guru Puja at the same time. This is the tradition. So what we'll do this afternoon is we'll read some excerpts written by the different devotees that knew Jayananda. In fact, there's a few websites on the qualities of Jayananda. He was an extraordinary personality. He's described to be ISKCON's first saint. And many devotees were completely touched by Jayananda's personality and his Krishna consciousness. So we'll read a few excerpts from this book, The Beautiful Life of Jayananda Thakur, by Vishoka Das, and a few other excerpts which I also have, which will give us some faith, inspiration, encouragement to also follow in his footsteps. Prabhupada said we should try to follow the example of Jayananda, so we can also gain some strength and inspiration and try to follow in his footsteps. So we can repeat, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So there are a few excerpts that I'll be reading from. So it may not be, you know, coherent in a systematic way. So the first one, on May 1st, just 4 days after his 38th birthday. So he was 38 years old when he left this world, or just before that, around. Srila Prabhupada's very dear disciple Jayananda passed away in his quarters at Los Angeles Temple Complex, New Dwarka. For the last few months, his body had been ravaged by leukemia, and recently he had abandoned all attempts to recovery and preparing for the crucial time of death, moved to New Dwarka to immerse himself in pure association of Lord Krishna's deity and his devotees. Jayananda joined the San Francisco Radha Krishna Temple early in 1967, just after it opened and less than a year after Srila Prabhupada founded the International Society for Krishna Consciousness in New York City. Though he had both an engineering degree from Ohio State University and a San Francisco State Teachers College degree, Jayananda was then supporting himself by driving a taxi cab. He was looking for a way to make life simple. At 28, he became a senior devotee in San Francisco and soon the temple president. Mukunda Das, who was there at that time, told us about Jayananda's rare qualities. Quote, "He proved himself to be the most responsible and selfless person. He could never detect, you could never detect even the most subtle type of wish to satisfy his own personal needs. He had that very unique attribute. Whatever needed to be done, he would do. He was driving his taxi cab 15 hours a day or more to get overtime to pay the temple's rent and various other expenses. And he was looking after 15 or 20 new brahmacharis. Over the years, Jayananda took special interest in the annual Rath Yatra festival. He would plan the festival, build the carts, cook and distribute prasad. During his last days, he was always planning how to expand Rath Yatra so that more temples could participate. Incapacitated as he was, he still helped design the special carts now being built in Los Angeles, which can be disassembled for easy transportation from city to city. Back in 1967, Jayananda gave Srila Prabhupada his life savings of $5,000, and then again with his last letter to Srila Prabhupada, Jayananda enclosed a second gift of $5,000, money that had been earmarked for medical expenses. Jayananda was so anxious to serve Srila Prabhupada that he even gave up the desire to go back to the spiritual world. Quote, "When I leave my body," he said near the end, "I want very much to come back to continue serving Srila Prabhupada in this world." These are the sentiments of Krishna's most exalted devotees, Vaishnavas, of whom Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, our great, great, grand spiritual master, once wrote, "He reasons ill who says Vaishnavas die. When thou art living, still in some. The Vaishnavas die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around." So here we can understand one of his special qualities, and that was to serve Srila Prabhupada. He had a very, very intense desire and enthusiasm to render service to Srila Prabhupada. And he rendered service to Srila Prabhupada in whatever way that was required. He would do the needful. Doesn't matter what it was. This was Jayananda. He did not want to, it's explained here, that the devotees could not find any selfish motive in Jayananda. Whatever he did, he did not want to do it for his own sense enjoyment, simply to please Srila Prabhupada. And during his life, this was exhibited even when he was leaving this world. When he had leukemia, or it was detected that he had leukemia, they admitted him in the hospital. So one devotee went to go see him in hospital. And he came at the reception and he asked, you know, where Jayananda was, and they said, you know, this ward. So he came into the room, into the ward. And when he came into the ward, he saw that there was nobody sitting or nobody lying on his bed besides a picture of Srila Prabhupada. So he was looking around and wondering, you know, where's Jayananda? Then he noticed Jayananda was on the floor. He was sleeping on the floor. So he went to Jayananda and said, "What are you doing? You know, why are you on the floor?" So Jayananda explained that, "I'm so fallen. And when they admitted me in the hospital, this hospital bed was so opulent. I never had such a bed in my life. So this wasn't fit for me to enjoy. This was fit to be offered to my spiritual master. So therefore I put a picture of Srila Prabhupada and offered the bed to him. And the floor was fit for me. So this was Jayananda. We can imagine. You know, he's got leukemia. He's suffering. We wouldn't even bother, put me on bed, get me treated. But yet, his consciousness was so clear, even though he had leukemia, still he did not want to enjoy anything separate from Srila Prabhupada. Amazing trait, amazing quality. This devotee, Vishoka, when he gave a talk on Jayananda, he started off his lecture describing the reality of this material world. So I'd like to read a few paragraphs from his lecture about the nature of the material world, and then he, directed towards a specific quality of Jayananda, which was very amazing. So he says, "The life of Jayananda is truly a guiding light for our troubled times of the world. If we examine his life, we shall get guidance and solace from this dark world. The world around us seems to get progressively worse as days go on." So this was 2002, okay. And now it's 2007, so the world is definitely getting worse. There is an ominous feeling of negativity that seems to pervade everything. Depression and hopelessness hangs like a fog all around us. Young people have gotten callous and negative in attitude and lifestyle. Cruelty to our fellow men has become commonplace. Violence is on the rise, such as the alarming trend of kids killing other kids. And violence is also seen in the epidemic of cruelty to animals, such as cats and dogs. The human society says that there is an alarming increase in finding cats that have been tortured. They found a cat that some demented person shot with a pellet gun over a dozen times, yet the poor thing was still alive. They say that there are many cases like this, and they would like to find these persons and put them in jail. A cat is just an innocent animal, not hurting anyone. And this is the unparalleled cruelty and violence, a dark, sinister trend of human behavior. We don't have to stand high on a rooftop and caterwaul to the multitudes about the horrors of evil in the world. Everyone knows it. Some people say that there is an evil spreading throughout human society, and some say it is the battle between good and evil, or God and Satan. They say there's a whole generation of evil on the rise. Some Christians say that they are the end of days and refer to biblical references. Some say that Mother Earth has been pushed to her limits and the end of the world will come someday. Morality has been steadily going down the drain and greed and lust are rampant. The world is in such a tailspin, and we wonder out loud, how are we going to pull this world out of its hell-bent path? It seems as easy to stop a runaway train that's careening through a mountain pass, ready to plunge off the precipice. How will we ever make a difference in this world? Look at us now. We're supposed to be the brain of society, the brahmanas. And we have got so many of our own problems to deal with that it seems we won't get around fixing the world. We're too self-absorbed in our own problems. The missionary spirit of which this movement was founded is on an extremely depressing wing. How will the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pull the world out of its hell-bound course? How are we going to turn this world around and begin the golden age of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's 10,000 years? It appears hopeless to we who are faint of heart, and we who perceive such overwhelming odds dashing our hopes of spiritual revolution on this planet. So then he goes and now he describes. So Jayananda never got this. Okay, well, just read one more paragraph before that, where Srila Prabhupada explains on the same theme about the nature of the world. And in one morning walk, Srila Prabhupada said that even the skyscrapers will fall down someday. So everything in this material world, sooner or later, will cease to exist. There is a daydream of every man and woman, and there is night dream. Both are temporary, therefore both illusory. It is just that the daydream is longer and feels more solid, yet still temporary, still asset. Lord Chaitanya said that even the Himalayan mountains will someday cease to exist, despite the fact that these mighty mountains are proclaimed by Bhagavad Gita to be the chief of immovable objects. But one day, they will be no more. Everything we see in this world will pass away eventually. So the devotee does not consider about when and if the end is coming. He knows it will be so, sooner or later, and so he utilizes his valuable time wisely for serving Krishna. So Jayananda never got distracted by the temporary setbacks and problems in this material world. He simply went ahead with his execution of Srila Prabhupada's order, despite all the all-pervasive negativity in the world. He persevered through all difficulties by being proactive in spreading Krishna consciousness. He was the Acharya of doing. He went out and did tangible feats of huge amounts of service while others talked. He could reverse any negative situation by his natural positive attitude. He was always turning negative energy into positive energy. He could turn the minus into a plus. So this was Jayananda's amazing ability. He could take any negative situation and make it positive. And he had different ways of doing this. One way was that if there's a negative situation, he wouldn't worry about it. When he would come to the temple and the devotees would say, Jayananda, we have this problem in the temple. He would say, Jai Jagannath, and then just carry on. There was another person he was trying to preach, and the person was, you know, being very cruel. So all he did was, he did a cartwheel. If you know what a cartwheel is, you know, jump and, you know, starts doing some aerobatics, and the person was completely mesmerized by that. Wow! Hari Bol! And that's how he got the person to melt. Prasadam distribution, Jayananda, he would change situations by prasadam, distributing prasadam. Otherwise, just by his nature, he would change situation. But he was a person, and we'll read some excerpts, never into negativity, never into criticism, never into finding fault, never really bothered about any challenge or problem. Nothing was an obstacle for him. And he had such a powerful service attitude. This is how he transcended the bodily difficulties. Because when we identify with the body, then we have many problems. Starting with health problems, this problem, that problem, because of the body. But Jayananda, he only saw spirit soul. He saw himself as a servant of Krishna, Srila Prabhupada, and whenever he saw anyone, he didn't see the body. He just saw spirit soul. And because there's a spirit soul, and I'm the spirit soul, and I'm the spirit soul of, I'm the servant of the spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, therefore I need to serve. And disparate soul, he needs Krishna's mercy. Therefore my service is to give him Krishna's mercy. And that's all he did. That's all he meditated on. There's a beautiful pastime. First we'll read an excerpt of Srila Prabhupada's comment about Jayananda. So one devotee, Adi Keshava, recalls, "So I saw Jayananda at that moment. He was just, the look on his face was so ecstatic." If you see Jayananda's face, even on the picture, his blissful smile. He was instrumental in setting up Rath Yatra and building the first Rath Yatra cart, single-handed. He would go around. It's described, we had to spend, like 150,000 to build a chariot. Jayananda spent nothing. He decided, okay, I need to build a chariot for Lord Jagannath. So in the evening, just before the sun would set, he would go drive around in his neighborhood, and there he would look, okay, let's see what we can use. Oh, this wood is lying here, these planks or these tires, right, okay. And then next day he would go and collect everything. He built this whole chariot without spending a single cent. He did not employ anyone to weld, to knock nails. A person would be walking by, oh, sorry. Here's a hammer, here's a nail. And the person would start banging. They wouldn't know how or what they're doing, Oh, sorry, come here. Start. And all of a sudden you would see Jayananda, he's busy underneath, and everybody, all these people, no dhotis, just, karmis that he just got, that were by, going past, practically building this chariot. And in total ecstasy, they didn't know, what hit them, they would be total ecstasy. And then he would go cook prasad and feed them all. So this was Jayananda, he was an exceptional devotee. So this devotee called, the look on his face was so ecstatic, it was like a crowning triumph. I couldn't help just burst into tears. I turned around and Srila Prabhupada was also crying, looking at Jayananda. And Srila Prabhupada said, "I am so pleased with him because he is so sincere." So this was one of the qualities that Srila Prabhupada saw in Jayananda, his sincerity. Now here's a beautiful excerpt of Jayananda's, we describe Jayananda's exceptional quality of service. This is what kept him alive. He would, for example, for the building the chariot, he would spend 15 hours a day on the chariot, every single day building the chariot, working towards this festival. So his attitude of service was exceptional. The attitude of wanting to push oneself forward and be close to one's guru may not be much appreciated by him. Rather, the effort to humbly serve him is genuinely devotional. Once at a program arranged for Srila Prabhupada, devotees crowded around him on the stage, around Srila Prabhupada. And it's natural, it's like when the guru comes, everybody wants to be with the guru, be near the guru. Right? So when Srila Prabhupada was there, Prabhupada came for the program. So naturally everybody wanted to be near Prabhupada, be, Prabhupada, this is me, Notice, yes. So they wanted to get Prabhupada's recognition, get a glimpse of Prabhupada, Prabhupada just had to look at me and that's my perfection. Okay? This is what everyone desires, for the spiritual master to recognize, just to glance, just to get some, and that's transcendental. It's not mundane to get some recognition, some encouragement, some darshan from Spoju Master. So that everybody was around Srila Prabhupada. Around him on the stage, each one eager to have Srila Prabhupada recognize or say something to him. Unfortunately, in their enthusiasm to be close to the Guru, they overlooked necessary services such as greeting guests and arranging prasadam. From the time of entering the hall to leaving it, Srila Prabhupada neither spoke individually to any of his disciples, nor even glanced at them. He simply entered, chanted, lectured, and left. But while heading for the exit, he took a sudden turn and opened a door to see Jayananda Prabhu alone in the kitchen, preparing prasad for the devotees and guests. Srila Prabhupada entered, closed the door. Jaya Shishantai Gohari Ki. Srila Prabhupada entered, closed the door, and spent 10 minutes talking alone with Jayananda Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada had ignored those devotees who tried to forcibly get his attention, but of his own accord showered mercy on one who only wanted to serve. Jayananda Prabhu Ki. This was Jayananda. His amazing ability to serve. And Srila Prabhupada could detect that. Srila Prabhupada noted that. And here we see how, you know, transcendental Krishna consciousness is. Nobody had to tell Srila Prabhupada that Jayananda is in the kitchen. The Super Soul directed Srila Prabhupada, you go to the kitchen, Jayananda is there, he's serving. But everybody else, they wanted the spiritual master's attention. And Jayananda, he knew how to get the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Simply to serve his order. And this happened in many instances. Prabhupada would come to the temple and everybody would be around except Jayananda. Jayananda is busy serving. And who do you think Prabhupada is looking for? Jayananda. Prabhupada said, where's Jayananda? And Jayananda, he was so busy serving that when he would come to sit one time, Jayananda was on a marathon. So he came to sit and in the class, and Srila Prabhupada was giving class. So Jayananda was sitting in the back and he was so tired, so he fell off to sleep. And one devotee was sitting next to Jayananda, you know, like nudged him to tell him, you know, wake up, you know, don't sleep. And Prabhupada noticed that. So Prabhupada said, no, don't do that. The amount of service that Jayananda do, you will not even be able to match that. So let him take rest. Let him take rest. So Jayananda was definitely a very exceptional personality. So I'm going to read a few excerpts from Jayananda. When we hear these excerpts, it should give us encouragement, because Jayananda spent 10 years in Krishna consciousness before he left this world. And he was a taxi driver. He would drive just so that he could get some luxury, and he would take his paycheck, and at the end of the month he would come and give his paycheck to Prabhupada. This is Jayananda. He didn't bother about, you know, if I give my paycheck to the guru, well, I'm gonna, how am I going to pay my bills? Nope, that wasn't his concern. I'm simply living for my guru, therefore here's a paycheck. My guru can do as he wishes. And Prabhupada would, you know, see. And Prabhupada would obviously give him to assist him. So here are a few points that Jayananda made in his own notes in the front jacket of his Krishna book. So he wrote, as you begin to apply the books clearly, it should be, as you begin to apply the books clearly described principles to your life, you quickly experience a new realm of mental pose and experience an inner happiness even in the midst of the most trying circumstances. You worry less and enjoy more. Your power of concentration, memory, understanding and creativity will increase. You'll work more energetically, more confidently and efficiently, as well as relate better to people. And you'll succeed more easily at whatever you try doing. At night, you'll fall asleep immediately. And in the morning, you'll awaken thoroughly refreshed with even less hours sleep than you normally need. Consequently, you'll understand the real purpose of your life and your unique role in creation. So, Jayananda said, simply by applying these principles in Krishna book, these principles in Bhagavad Gita, you will be able to achieve all this. And we can see from Jayananda, he had firm faith in what he was doing. And therefore, for Jayananda, these things were a reality. He was living Krishna consciousness. First exchange. Later, I was on the top of a truck with Jayananda, helping him. I felt such warmth from him, like being back with an old friend. I asked him a question. What is the problem? Why can't we just surrender to Krishna? It seems like an easy thing. He gave me this blissful smile, like he was pleased that I asked him a philosophical question. He said, it's not so easy, because we are all rascals. I was surprised to hear him say that. I was naive at that time and I thought that all these shaved-headed devotees were so pure. I expected to hear him say that surrender wasn't easy for others, just the others. But he humbly included himself. This was the first exchange. It felt so good to be able to talk with Jayananda. I was thinking that he was such an exceptional person, yet he would talk with me like an old friend. Another time a devotee came to Jayananda and said, Jayananda Prabhu, how do you make spiritual advancement? And Jayananda said, I don't know, I'm too busy serving. So this was Jayananda. He was too busy serving. Certain as death and Texas. These little memories are often best. One thing was very certain, just as certain as death and Texas. And that was Jayananda losing his bead bag on a daily basis. I remember this well. It seemed almost every day I would see Jayananda walking around the Raksh site, scratching his head and muttering, where's my bead bag? He would hint that it would be nice if we help him look for it. Then I would stop what I was doing and help him look, and the bead bag would always be in some obscure place or on some beam or in some nook or cranny in the shadows or somewhere underneath the canopy of the cart or somewhere like that. Then Jayananda would touch his bead bag to his forehead and continue chanting his 16 rounds and we would go back to our tasks. So even while Jayananda is hammering away underneath the cart, he would be chanting Hare Krishna also now and then.
Right.
Jayananda saves the day. So now this big demon, it's a long story, there's a big demon that comes and disturbs them. And while they're busy with the chariot, so this huge demon, they call him Ravana, he's approaching now. So this big demon was standing on the sidewalk outside our parking lot, about 20 yards away. And he was throwing garbage bags over the fence and screaming and taunting me. I was really scared and wondered how we could persuade this demon, obviously in the lowest mode of ignorance, to cease and desist his obnoxious defilement of our sacred arena. I was thinking, why am I guarding Lord Jagannath's cart? Cars. Here I am, a scrawny brahmachari. What can I do to guard the Lord's cart from this formidable demon? Then, to save the day, Jayananda somehow woke up. I guess he heard all the rukas. He and I stood there a while, since he was still trying to wake up, and we stared at Marichi, wannabe, throwing trash bags and defiling the ether with his foul exclamations. While I was helpless to solve the problem, Jayananda was empowered by Krishna with diplomatic skills to soothe any wild beast. And so he began to slowly stroll down the sidewalk towards this rascal, very nonchalantly, with a happy-go-lucky smile on his face and his arms swinging to and fro in a carefree manner, while my teeth were chattering with an ominous trepidation at what was about to happen. But I had firm faith in Jayananda and stood in my spot so as not to intimidate the demon anymore and thus escalate the situation. I didn't know if the demon was going to fly into Jayananda's face or what, but I had faith that Jayananda knew what he was doing. The demon watched Jayananda coming to his friendly mood. And instead of a possible row that I feared, the Marichi wannabe backed off and made retreat before the friendly yet formidable figure of Jayananda got close. Jayananda always knew just how to handle every confrontation with inimical people. And if the event so would have stayed, Jayananda undoubtedly would have befriended and endeared him. Jayananda was that way, always a kind friend to all, even to the ruffians. Jayananda performed superhuman activities. Jayananda possessed great mystic power. Those Rath Yatra festivals would not have happened without Jayananda. He was empowered by Krishna to do superhuman feats that made Rath Yatra happen, even when the situation seemed impossible, especially the New York Rath Yatra in 1976, which Jayananda considered to be his crowning glory and the perfection of his life. At first, he was not going to build a car due to a bad back, but he got swept up into the service and agreed to do it. The New York temple had no money, and Adi Keshava said that Srila Prabhupada doesn't trust us, meaning that it was iffy in Srila Prabhupada's mind whether they could do it or not. At first, Jayananda and the devotees just drove around and around the area of town, and some devotees asked, "Why are we just driving around here all the time?" Jayananda was chasing out the place. They were on a very low budget, so Jayananda made mental notes of where lumber and stuff just seemed to be lying around. And then they came back in the dead of the night for some discount lumber and parts. Sometimes this is known as a five-finger discount. And in devotee circles, sometimes it's known as transcendental repossession. As everybody in the world is thinking, this is mine, but the reality is that it's all Krishna's property. Always was and always will be. It was like Jayananda was saying to the New York residents, "My dear inhabitants of Big Apple, please know that Lord Jagannath already owns everything we see in this town. Actually, he owns everything in the universe. We just forgot. And you may feel reluctant to freely donate, and so we guess that we'll just have to take some transcendental repossession of a few things for Lord Jagannath's service. And you will all benefit from it." Jayananda gathered his material by hook or crook, and sometimes, like his boga shopping, he would persuade some merchants to donate and give big discounts. As for manpower, Jayananda would grab people off the streets out of the temple, bums, hippies, lazy devotees, and get them to work day and night, even against their will. You just couldn't stop your lazy self from helping Jayananda. It was impossible. Jayananda's enthusiasm was most powerful and contagious spiritual energy that spread and infected everybody around him. The cart that normally would take many thousands of dollars to build, Jayananda would just transcendentally extract all the material and manpower from the very woodwork of the neighborhood, so to speak, and he would stir his transcendental cauldron with the ladle of his great love for Srila Prabhupada, and poof, there would magically appear out of the air these wonderful and colorful and majestic carts of Lord Jagannath. In this way, Jayananda pulled off a veritable miracle by building carts on a practically nothing budget. Who could imagine such a feat? But wherever there is Jayananda and his ragtag band of Mary Street urchins, the discount parts and labor lying about, there will certainly be opulence and victory and extraordinary power. And then these wonderful majestic carts will certainly be rolling down the streets of big cities with thousands of devotees loudly chanting and dancing all around them to bless everyone with the Lord's mercy. Impossible is not a word in Jayananda's dictionary. Then the day before the Rath Yatra parade, a strong wind blew the dome over, and there was a big groaning sound in the metal. The beam snapped. So that big beam, the center beam, snapped. It was broken and the devotees freaked out and were crying in despair. Some GBC said the whole thing was off. There'd be no parade and they would have to tell Srila Prabhupada the bad news. The faint-hearted will perceive these kinds of things to be insurmountable and they would give up and say it's impossible. But impossible is not a word in Jayananda's dictionary. As the cliche says, when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. In devotee's language, it's more like when Maya attacks the strongest, then devotees depend on Krishna even stronger. This material world is full of trials and tribulations, and some are like insurmountable oceans. But Krishna says, Mam evaya prapadyante maya etam tarantite. The divine energy of mind, consisting of the three modes of material nature, is difficult to overcome. But those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond it. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. Here Krishna says, those who surrender unto me can easily cross beyond the ocean of Maya. And when a devotee surrenders to Krishna, then the oceanic difficulties shrink down to the amount of water left in a calf's footprint, and he easily crosses over. So Adi Keshava Das said, don't worry, we got Jayananda. Then Jayananda and his men rolled up their sleeves and went to work all that night. The next day, the beam was repaired and Lord Jagannath's cart was rolling. This was Jayananda's superhuman activity in New York. So nothing stopped Jayananda. Three holy entities. Jayananda had explicit faith in three holy entities. Srinam, the words of Srila Prabhupada, and Prasad. So this was Jayananda's three holy entities. The holy name, the words of Srila Prabhupada, and Prasadam. This was his means of success in all his activities while giving Krishna consciousness to others. First of all, he would always be serving Prasad to others, giving the mercy. Sometimes it was to bums on the market street and or patrons of some bar. He was missing at a certain time every day and devotees wondered where he was. And someone found him cooking prasad for the poor souls at some bar. They were trying to drown their sorrows in some kind of rotten ale, but somehow they got the mercy. Whenever Jayananda was at the temple, he jumped at every chance to serve out Mahaprasad to the guests. And he would cook breakfast prasad for the Sankirtan devotees. The two occasions that I went on incense runs with him to Salt Lake City and to Redding, California, he would always cook our meals. And it was always nectar prasadam. Oh, we would stay at devotees' houses here and there. It seemed he always knew somebody in every city. And he would cook for everyone and we'd have a program. In the same way, he was always giving the holy name or chanting the holy names, starting a kirtan whenever he could. His impromptu kirtans were real famous. I'll talk about that later. So Jayananda's kirtans, the devotees really loved Jayananda's kirtans. When I got to the scene, it was wonder. San Francisco was famous for its Sunday feast kirtans. After the feast, there was always a huge kirtan in the hallway. When was the kirtan? After the feast. So they would have a normal kirtan, right? Then they would take prasad, and sure enough, after prasad, Jayananda was there, right? And they would start the impromptu kirtans. Why the hallway? I suppose there was no time to clear out the temple. Because, you know, everyone sitting in temple, so, you know, forget about washing, cleaning, you know, let's go have kirtan. And they would go and start having kirtan. When I got there, I saw Jayananda in the center, surrounded by 40 or 50 devotees, just going wild. The kirtan, the kartel, the drums, were like staccato transcendental machine guns, annihilating every inch of Maya for miles around. Jayananda was doing his dance, legs back and forth, twirling, going nuts, playing cartels like a madman, and everybody was equally mad. It was really powerful. I never saw such powerful energy. It was Krishna's internal energy. Maybe the sweet rice had a little something to do with it. Yeah, mixed with ecstatic prasadam, with ecstatic dancing and chanting, and you get a crowd of madmen and women at the Frisco temple every Sunday. It happens every time. So there's many other kirtan pastimes of Jayananda. His kirtan would melt the devotees' hearts, and they would cry in his kirtans. Very, very powerful. His powerful japa. Next are some episodes of us chanting japa, or personal recitation of the holy names of Lord Krishna. Jayananda's japa was so powerful. He would sit straight upright and chant really intensely. I vividly remember one occasion when we were in the temple room one morning chanting japa. It was one of those rare occasions where Jayananda was not busy doing something else. And he somehow took time out for japa, even though it was in the daytime, not the early morning hours. The sun was bright, was very bright, streaming down in the temple room. The temple room was really transcendently beautiful in the daytime, with sunlight effulgence enveloping the whole room, coming in from the skylight dome in the roof right over the middle of the temple. The walls were a nice yellow, with many transcendental pictures on the wall. Jayananda was sitting on a mat like a yogi, back straight, his eyes closed in deep concentration, and the mantra shot out from his lips in a very strong and forceful staccato rapid-fire stream of nectar. It seemed that all of us stopped our minds for a few moments, stopped our wandering thoughts, stopped our breath for a few moments, and we all took serious notice of Jayananda's powerful japa. We all stopped what we were doing and looked at Jayananda and looked at each other in a kind of wonder. Then there were two new bhaktas who were sitting near the door, and they too stopped with blank looks on their faces, and then both of them started to laugh. I think Jayananda's japa was so strong and unusual and startling, so vividly real, that they reacted with the confusion of humor because they didn't know what to make of it. But I immediately gave them a glance and frowned, sort of saying not to make fun with Jayananda's japa. And their faces immediately turned so somber also. His loud japa went on for quite a long time too. He didn't know that we were all taking notice because his eyes were closed for the whole time. So he really absorbed, he really focused. He didn't, you know, mess around with his japa. He took it very, very seriously. There was a particular acute representative of Berkeley who used to follow our street chanting party, shouting obscenities and making threats, ironically enough, in the name of God. His religious affiliation, he had determined, gave him the special privilege to condemn our efforts in public prayer. We ignored him by following Jayananda's joyful dancing. One day in particular, however, Jayananda looked very serious, and to me seemed urgent in his efforts to drown out the intruder's curses. He would look at the man right in the eyes while jumping up and down to the rhythms of the cartels he played so emphatically. The man, however, wouldn't release his evil intentions and persisted in harassing our little chanting choir. As we came to the street crossing on our daily route, the light was red, and we were temporarily held face to face with this irate fellow who had now forced Jayananda one on one. I saw Jayananda warn him with a deep concern and compassion. If you don't stop disturbing the devotees and Lord Chaitanya's mission, Krishna will kill you. Please, you should be more careful. So this is what he told him. The man continued, mad with rage. Then, in his blind climax of enthusiasm, the forever angry man stepped off the curb and was immediately hit by a bus. The light had changed to green. We continued unaware of a few moments as the crowd gathered behind us. Looking back, we never stopped praying, and our voices lifted in the clearing ether to the rhythms of the ringing kartels. There was sadness in Jayananda's eyes that caused my heart to enlarge a bit. Still, I couldn't take it all in like I saw that he did in full. So even though the man was killed, still Jayananda felt compassion. Still he felt great compassion. Jayananda could not sleep. Anyway, Jayananda was working real hard on this particular Rath Yatra. And what happened was he somehow stepped on a nail. Now listen to this. Which went right through his shoe into his foot, deep. It was very painful, but he did not let it stop him. He told me how he limped around for 3 days until the day of the Rath Yatra. Not only was his foot in pain for 3 days, he did not sleep for those 3 days, working day and night, 24 hours a day for Lord Jagannath. This I also saw in the summer of 75. I would sleep a while at the Rath site and wake up any time of the night and see Jayananda working on Srila Prabhupada Vyasa's seat on the cart. It took him all night to get it the way he wanted it. After all, it was the day before the parade and Srila Prabhupada would be riding on this cart, and Jayananda could not sleep until it was perfect. His devotion to Srila Prabhupada was boundless. So you can imagine his dedication to Srila Prabhupada, his service to Srila Prabhupada was what kept him alive in Krishna consciousness. Jayananda's enthusiasm is irresistible. Here's another story I heard. It was in New York City. The temple had a gift shop on the 3rd floor, but it seemed that nobody was into it. There wasn't much enthusiasm to shop there, and Jayananda was getting weaker and weaker. He had to use a wheelchair to get around. They gave the service of the gift shop to Jayananda. Before long, all due to Jayananda's enthusiasm and ingenuity, he somehow had customers thronging the gift shop, coming up the elevator and stairs, whereas previously the shop was neglected. There was no impediment to his devotional service. The same thing happened in Los Angeles. Jayananda single-handedly organized the Rath Yatra, making many phone calls from his bed. Sometimes he was so weak, confined to a wheelchair, but some mornings he would come to Mangal Arati and get up and dance. He was very weak in bed and told one Prabhu, "Someday you're going to come in and find this bag of stool in the bed." The Rath Yatra festival in Los Angeles proved to be the biggest ever, and it all came about only due to the desire of Jayananda. And that is why Srila Prabhupada said we should put a photograph of Jayananda in front of the chariot, because basically Jayananda was the personality that started it and made it happen. Alright, let's see. We'll just read one or two and then we'll have Pushpanjali. Jayananda turns negative to positive. Jayananda would always turn a weird situation into doing a benefit for other person. Like the fisherman's wolf episode. When the lobster murderer stand people through hot and stinky fish water at the devotee's feet as they went by on Harinam. So even in those days, when devotees go chanting, people would throw certain things, they'll throw eggs or water bags. And so this person was throwing stinky fish water at the devotees. I would have gotten into a fight with them, like yelling and shaking fists, but Jayananda was in control of his senses and approached them with cookies and said, listen to what he said, "Thank you, thanks for doing such a nice service of cleansing the sidewalk." This genuinely affected them. Similarly, He was always trying to give prasad to others, like visitors of the temple, or taking out extra prasad to the street for the bums and so forth. He was fond to be cooking for the drunks in the bar. He was always asking wandering hippies to help with the cart, not just to get their labor, but to engage them in the service for their benefit, knowing that even a little service brings transcendental bliss. You can see how here Jayananda was never disturbed by the negativity. You know, if somebody threw, you know, fish water, right, at us, or even at me, I would, you know, think, hey, this is fish water, it's dirty. You know, how can you, you know, even consider anything about cleanliness? But Jayananda, nope. Thank you for, you know, washing the streets. And here's a cookie. Very nice. Thank you. Naturally, it'll melt the people's hearts. Full to the neck. Jayananda felt guilty in the early days in San Francisco because he thought he was going there mostly to eat. And Prabhupada kept encouraging him to take more prasad. Jayananda said that Prabhupada would put all the preps on a big metal plate and serve him from the plate till he was full to the neck. Srila Prabhupada would cook special for Jayananda and make sure that he took. How Jayananda loved prasad in those early days. He told me about a pot of halva always kept in the temple. He said how this halva was so potent and transcendental, how it made him so Krishna conscious when he came back from a hard day in the taxi cab. He gave donations to Prabhupada from his earnings as a cab driver. And when he would come in the morning and no one would be there, he was sure to be fed. In the evening, he said that Srila Prabhupada would personally either hold the prasad for him or personally cook the prasad for him when he came back, and would exclude all other devotees just so that he could give Jayananda prasad. So they had a very powerful relationship. His classic feast of buttermilk and bananas. Bananas and buttermilk, this was the classic Jayananda impromptu feasts. When all devotees of San Francisco see buttermilk and bananas, they think of Jayananda. He was always going out and getting bananas and buttermilk and bringing it to us at the Rath Yatra site. He was always alert when there was a maha offering newly transferred, that the devotees were hovering around the trays. Jayananda would always get a tray and try to distribute some maha to the devotees, but only after the guests were duly fed. Each day in the kitchen, Jayananda would cook in the morning for the Sangatan devotees and then serve it out to them. And then late at night, he would clean the kitchen while we slept. It is painful now to think back how I slept while he was working into the night. That was how he wanted it. He wanted us to get rest so that we could serve Krishna nicely the next day. To describe, Jayananda would be the last to take rest and the first to get up. So is Jayananda. Always meditating on the next festival. Jayananda was always meditating on the next festival at which there would be mass distribution of prasadam. If it was not Rath Yatra, then it was Govardhan Hill Festival in San Diego, or Santa Cruz Festival, or the Berkeley Festival. Jayananda always had a project of some upcoming festival and feast. We had this old red truck, and Jayananda performed so many transcendental prasadam pastimes with this old beloved red truck. I guess the slogan for Jayananda may well be, have red truck, world travel to the next festival and feast. He was always in the garage, building a prasad cart or building the rath cart for the next festival and feast. Always seizing the moment. Nothing in this material world really mattered to Jayananda, except that we prepare and distribute and honor nice prasad. If there was a TV announcement that World War III had begun and the bombs were on their way, Jayananda would just cook and serve prasad to all of us while we chanted Hari Bol. And then we would all relish Krishna prasad at Krishna's holy names resounding. and to hell with the bombs or whatever, because Jayananda will always seize the opportunity. Listen to how Jayananda loved Prasadam, because there were three things that he honored greatly. What were they? What were they? The holy name, Prabhupada's words, and Prasadam. So let's see how he honored, really honored Prasad. Jayananda worshipped Prasad. When a little Prasad spilled on the floor, he would always bend down on all fours and lick it up. He loved to cook, offer, distribute and eat Prasad in a big way. He would always take Prasad with him and distribute it, whether it was making a bhogaran, buying bulk food from the market, or taking a chanting party downtown. He would even say, Prasad is the special way that made you immediately want to take some. Don't sleep but hear. Jayananda told me one time how back in Frederick Street, temple devotees would sometimes bring their sleeping bags to class, and they'd be sleeping there while Jayananda was the only one listening to Srila Prabhupada. So you can imagine early days, you know, devotees would be all sleeping bags. Yeah. And Jayananda was the only one sitting and listening. Here is where we can see Jayananda's success in spiritual life. He was eager to hear from his spiritual master. In this way, Jayananda pleased his Gurudev, and thus empowered to perform extraordinary devotional service. He taught service, not position. Sometimes you would find Jayananda underneath a car, changing the oil, and so forth. Is this not a strange position for one so advanced? That is the whole point. Position. Jayananda was not desirous of any particular position or post. Any position was fine for him, if it served Krishna. Servant means no position, only service. He did not care anything for pratishtha or distinction. He desired only to be the servitor of Krishna, and thought all others were Krishna's eternal servitors. This was his vision. This is Ekatvam, the oneness of vision. He always said how others were advancing so nicely in Krishna consciousness, going on beyond himself. Srila Prabhupada writes how this is the mood of one who is really pure. He thinks himself as lower than the low, and all others as better servants of Krishna. And finally, last episode of Jayananda's amazing characteristic of not finding fault. Jayananda would never want to hear about any negative aspect about a devotee. Naturally, being such an amazing devotee, everybody wanted Jayananda's association. When Jayananda would be in association with devotees, and as soon as somebody said anything negatively about a devotee, or criticized or found fault about a devotee, Jayananda would just get up and leave. And as soon as he would get up and leave, then naturally the devotees, you know, or the devotee that said something, you know, would immediately think, "Oop, what did I say? You know, I shouldn't have said, because now, you know, we don't have Jayananda's association." So this is how Jayananda would show how he didn't want to hear anything negative about anyone or any situation. And he was fully absorbed simply in trying to serve. And if there is no service, he would go into the kitchen, he would cook, and out he would be serving prasadam to the bums, in the bars. So in that sense, there was always service for Jayananda. He was never idle. In fact, one devotee, a new guest came to the temple, and he saw Jayananda taking the dirt and putting the dirt into the dustbin, moving the trash. So he, you know, came and he started to speak to Jayananda and started asking questions, and he was so amazed by Jayananda. And later on he found out that Jayananda was the temple president. And he was thinking, you know, wow, you know, if he's the temple president doing this, then you can imagine all the other devotees. So Jayananda, you know, he was amazing devotee, amazing transcendental personality. And Srila Prabhupada said, Jayananda's death is glorious. We read how Prabhupada, in Prabhupada's letter, it was amazing. Prabhupada wrote to him, preaching to us also. See, Prabhupada said, you know, because you were such a wonderful devotee, and you were chanting Hare Krishna, you were, you know, so absorbed. Definitely, you've gone back to the spiritual world. But even if you had some material desire to enjoy, then you're going to have many plans where you'll enjoy for thousands of years, and then from there you can go to the spiritual world from there. So Prabhupada wrote in that way. Jayananda's death is glorious. It is very good that we had stated what is the that he had stated what is the use of such a useless body. Better to give it up. He has left his body very wonderfully, and he has been transferred to Vaikuntha. So here Prabhupada is confirming. I have already sent a condolence letter for publication in the Back to Godhead, into Back to Godhead. Everyone should follow the example of Jayananda. I am very proud that I had such a nice disciple. If possible, Jayananda's picture should be hung in the rut of Lord Jagannath, and in all our temples a day may be set aside for holding a festival in his honor, just as we do on the Disciplinarian Day of other great Vaishnavas. So we can, and there's many, many other pastimes that we can try to recollect, try to hear about in terms of Jayananda. So we can take this opportunity. Generally, when a devotee is leaving this world, then we pray to Krishna for the devotee. But when the devotee who is as sincere as Jayananda, as faithful, enthusiastic to serve, and dedicated, avoiding offensive mentality, when you get such a soul, then no doubt his destination is glorious and going back to the spiritual world. So when he leaves this world, then we don't pray to Krishna for him. We pray to him for us. So then we can actually offer prayers to him for our benefit, because he's alive and well in the service of Krishna, and he hears your prayers very clearly. Just like when he told this bully that please, you know, don't disturb the Sankirtan party, otherwise Krishna will kill you. See? And his words came true. We can pray, we can use this day. These days are called Mother of Devotion days. We can use this day to pray to Jayananda, to give us his mercy, his blessing, so that we can also develop even a fraction of his wonderful character and qualities, to serve devotees, to distribute prasadam, to chant Hare Krishna. In this way we can also perfect our Krishna consciousness. Jayananda Prabhu ki. A materialistic man achieves great things, money, etc., by being determined, fearless, convinced, and motivated, etc. A devotee has the same quality of conviction, determination. What motivates a devotee to achieve in spiritual life? So what motivated Jayananda? Simply to please Srila Prabhupada. Now why would that be a motive? Why would that be a motive? And a very powerful motive. Why would that be a motive? Yasya prasada, bhagavat prasada. If you want the mercy of Krishna, you must get the mercy of the devotee. If you please Krishna's devotee, you actually please Krishna. You cannot serve Krishna directly, therefore you cannot please Krishna directly. And in fact, if you want to serve Krishna directly, Krishna will be very upset. And even if you try serving Krishna directly and Krishna gives the opportunity, you will not be qualified. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada mentions, just like sometimes we may think, I'm serving the deity, I'm serving Krishna, I'm a very wonderful devotee. And Srila Prabhupada says, you know, your service is nothing. What can you offer Krishna? Are you qualified to offer anything to Krishna? Do you have pure love for Krishna? And even if you have pure love, do you have more love than Radharani? Because Krishna only accepts those things coming from Srimati Radharani. So therefore you cannot offer anything to Krishna. In fact, Prabhupada says, you are useless. So you can imagine. So then what are we doing? If you can't serve Krishna, then we might as well commit suicide. So we can't serve Krishna, but we can serve his representative. And his representative is very, very merciful. His representative will accept even the slightest service. What was his name? Hanuman. Hanuman Swami recollects he was a sannyasi and he became lusting over a woman and he got married. Now if you know the Vedic culture, which Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also boldly illustrated with Chota Haridas. Chota Haridas was one of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates and he went to beg some rice. And it wasn't like a young beautiful, it was an old lady. She gave him some rice. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu banished him. Because as a sannyasi, you came in contact with a woman. Now, Hanuman Maharaj, he became lusty and he actually fell down with a woman and he got married. So, when Prabhupada came to his place, he went to go see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was sitting on the Vyasasan and Hanuman Swami came, now it was Hanuman Prabhu came to see Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada had his head down. And he came to tell Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected Chota Haridas. Because as a sannyasi, he looked at a woman. And I also, I fell down with a woman. And Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord, banished Haridas Thakur, Haridas, Chota Haridas. So, Srila Prabhupada, are you also going to banish me? And Prabhupada was looking down, didn't say anything. And then Prabhupada commented. Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is God. He can spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world single-handedly. I am a servant of God. I cannot do that. Therefore, I need everyone's help. Therefore, please continue serving. So this is Prabhupada's mercy. Therefore, one of the motives that allow a devotee to achieve something in spiritual life is simply to please Prabhupada. That's all. If we can please Prabhupada, then our life is successful. That's one motive. If you read Prabhupada's purports, that becomes another motive. If you just look at what Prabhupada did, just analyze. Here's an old man, 71 years old, leaving Vrindavan. He had everything, Mahaprasad, Devotee Association, Bhagavad Katha, Radha Damodar, deities, in Vrindavan Dham. What else you ask for? We want to leave the West and retire, in Vrindavan. Prabhupada already in Vrindavan at such an elderly age. He's there in Radha Damodar temple. And yet, at that elderly age, he decides to go over to the West with $7. No one to receive him on that end. And in 10 years, he travels the world 14 times, compiles 80 volumes of books, builds 108 temples, makes so many devotees. He must be special. And just to please him itself is special. So that keeps us alive, that gives us motivation. Okay. How can we get Jayananda's mercy? Simply by following Srila Prabhupada's instruction, by glorifying him. See, devotees, it's explained that devotee's heart is like china glass, chinaware. Now, if you know chinaware, right, when it falls and cracks, that's it. You can't use super glue and stick it together. It's just china glass is like that. It just shatters and it can't repay it. So a devotee's heart is like that. If you say something and hurt that heart, it's difficult to repair. But at the same time, it's so soft and beautiful, like chinaware, and better than chinaware, that if you just say something wonderful, the devotee's heart melts. So naturally, Jayananda, being such a great personality that he is, if you glorify and read about his characteristics and qualities, his heart melts. He cannot tolerate that. Therefore, he just blesses you. So in this way, we can glorify him, and he'll pray for our well-being. He'll pray to Srila Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada will bless us. And this is how the whole disciplic succession will bless us. Therefore, we don't need anything material to protect us. We are so fortunate we are protected by Srila Prabhupada. We're protected by great devotees like Jayananda. And we're protected by the whole disciplic succession. We're protected by all the incarnations. What does the devotee need to fear? And Jayananda had that firm faith. Prabhupada, in one purport in the second canto, we were reading, Prabhupada says that we don't need to fear. We can depend completely on Krishna's protection. And Prabhupada says, even if you go to the forest, you'll be completely protected by the wild animals. Even if you go to the forest, Krishna will protect you, Prabhupada said. And then he gives the example. He says, look at Haridas Thakur. Haridas Thakur was living in a cave, chanting Hare Krishna in the cave. All the devotees coming to get his association, soon felt fearful, that we every time we go there, we know there's a serpent, there's a python in that cave also. And if one day we're going to go there, that python is going to kill us. So we don't want to really go, and even though we want Haridas Thakur's association, we don't want. And Haridas Thakur, he knew that association is important, so he decided, okay, let's leave the cave and go somewhere else. But Prabhupada explains that the super soul in the heart of Haridas Thakur could understand his intention, and therefore the super soul in the heart of the python told the python, listen, you're disturbing Haridas Thakur, please leave the cave. And the python, all the devotees were there, Haridas Thakur was there, and the python just moved out and left. Did not do anything. So this is faith. When we have faith in the protection of Krishna, then nobody can do anything. And yes, if Krishna wants you to be impacted by that situation, whether it's by a thief or by a car or by a python, then so be it. That is Krishna's desire. He knows best. But if Krishna desires nothing will happen, then nothing will happen. That faith we should have. So with this faith, let us have Pushpanjali. We'll have Pushpanjali. We'll read some prayers. This is the normal ceremony. We'll get everyone to offer petals, and then we'll have Guru Puja and Kirtan, and then we'll end the program with Prasad distribution. Jai Nanda Prabhu ki, Shiva Prabhupada ki, Adhargo Pramanande.
Take a yes, and we can put his photograph on there.